Blog Talk Radio.
In this episode of Bringing Voices to Power, I talk with Faye Medlock, who is president of the Medical Cannabis Advocates of Alabama. We will discuss the current state of the legislation, research, Carly's Law, and how all this affects poor communities. Faye Medlock will fill us in on how her group is keeping discussion alive and moving the conversation forward. Good afternoon, Ms. Medlock. How are you doing?
I'm doing fine. How are you?
I'm doing great. I was just telling my listeners about how you and your group, y'all are keeping the conversation and discussion alive. Could you fill us in on exactly tell us, you know, everything else about your group and what you're doing to move legislation and the discussion forward?
Well, we're pushing, we're writing letters, emails, calling, trying to flood them with facts of cannabis, what all it cures, what all it helps with, what it can sustain. We're urging people to send their stories to the legislators, go walk the halls, talk to their legislators, also call federal congressmen, the DOJ, write to them, tell them their stories, tell them it needs to be not only rescheduled but delisted, taken off the NIDA. You know, we need to do away with NIDA as well. Talking out to getting outside this box on the computer, go outside, talk to people, anybody you see that will listen, and talk to them and educate the uneducated.
Yes, because there's been a lot of misconceptions about medical cannabis. You know, like we both know, when they took it off the list of the pharmacy list, they started a negative campaign. First, they were using it and listing it as a medicine. Then in 42, they took it off, and shortly thereafter started demonizing marijuana. But people need to also understand too, like, that the name, the marijuana, is sort of like a negative term. I know it's the term we've all heard and loved, but that's what they use to demonize cannabis. And I sort of thought that was interesting how the names, they're not saying, when they was doing all the negative campaign, it wasn't cannabis they were saying. They were saying marijuana.
Yeah, that's the slang that they were using for it. Cannabis is the botanical name. And that's why I always refer to it as cannabis, because that is what it is. It is an herb. And it should be able to be grown right outside in your garden, along with your tomatoes, your dill, your chives, just like it is. It's a seed-bearing plant, as in the Bible, as Genesis 1:29 says it's a seed-bearing. And God gave it to us, and it should be grown as an herb. And we should be allowed to grow it as an herb.
Yes, we should. And really, when I look at it and the part of the history of cannabis, I look at this as something, I mean, people, especially here in the Bible Belt in Alabama, you know, they'll whip the Bible out on you and they'll take a certain verse and make it whatever they want to make. But we should be able to use the Bible. Also, the people that are for legalization, even though that I don't smoke it, I will advocate to other people to have that choice because I know the history of it. You know, why deny something like this? It should be a part of your religious
sacrament
as well, because we get that from the Bible. You know, the ancient recipe for this oil, as recorded in Exodus, included over 9 pounds of flowering cannabis tops. And in Hebrew, there's a lot of people don't know that there's a Hebrew name for it. I don't want to murder this name, but I think it's Cannabis.
Cannabisum.
Yeah, Cannabisum in Hebrew. And it's extracted into a hen about 11 pints of all mixed with olive oil and a variety of other herbs and spices. And they use that to anoint themselves with. And so
yes, we know
the ancient prophets and God handed them down this recipe, it doesn't make sense that your average person cannot use that as part of. Now, what if I need these plants as part of my religious practice, as my religious routine, as so stated out in my religion in Exodus? So I don't see how they can keep doing this, because there is a case to be made that they're intruding in on your religious rights. It's part of your religious rights that you wipe yourself down in this. So I really can't understand that.
It's part of our civil rights. It's part of our human rights, as well as our religious rights to use this. Yes, you use it in your sacraments and your religious rites, but it's also our human rights to treat ourselves to be a pursuit of happiness. You can't be happy if you're sick. And it's part of our human rights as well to be able to choose what medicines we want to put in our bodies. I mean, the government shouldn't have that much power that they tell us what we have to take. You know, we should have that choice ourselves to what we want to put in our body.
Yes, that is true. And that's probably, if I'm not mistaken, I think it's Indiana, but the first church of cannabis, they probably used a lot of these biblical texts to win their rights. And I wish it was somebody in Alabama in the religious community that would take an honest look at this and come out and say that people should be able to anoint themselves the same way as our religious ancestors anointed themselves and recommended that we did, because I think it was, if I'm not mistaken, it might have been James who said that anyone who gets sick should be able to go out to the elders and have those elders anoint them with oil.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, James, he recommended that in the Christian community, if you were sick, you should call the elders and have them anoint you with oil in the name of Jesus. And we know what that recipe is. And how can I do my religious routine if I'm not allowed to use some of my religious ingredients?
Right.
No,
there is a Polish anthropologist called Sula Banet. And if you have never heard of her, I would recommend strongly checking up and reading up on some of her work. She goes in deeply into the Hebrew study of cannabis and the Bible.
And what's amazing is people need to know these things too, also, because a lot of times it'll be those in the religious community who have not educated themselves about cannabis be the biggest ones standing up against it. And a lot of them don't know that it was used by the very people that they are following and protest to stand up and represent.
Yes. I recently sat down with some pastors that are for cannabis. Here in the Montgomery area. And we sat and we talked about this. We really discussed, you know, where in the Bible, the passages in the Bible, where out, you know, throughout the Bible, actually, where it does mention them using it as smoke, and as the incense, as the tinting. All of these passages relate to canna and the use of canna. So it's there in the Bible. It's just you have to understand what you're reading.
Yeah, you have to understand what you're reading, and like you said, an aggressive campaign of educating people all the things, benefits, and historical use of cannabis, as well as medical and religious and spiritual.
Right. Even the Native American use canna and sage in their sacramental prayer. I mean, they're known to use it. There was an Egyptian princess's tomb found with some canna blossom found in there with her.
I know they had found some resin in the most famous Egyptian king of them all, Ramesses II. They found a lot of that in, you know, wrapped in his cloth. He had also had that wrapped in his cloth. They found a lot of resin from there. The Egyptians, there's artwork where Egyptian physicians were prescribing that to the people of Egypt for several different ailments.
And look at the Chinese. For over 5,000 years, they have been using it as medicine. Never has been a death by cannabis. Never a reported death by cannabis in history.
Never in history. And look at
but you can't say that about prescription drugs.
You can't even say that about alcohol.
Alcohol, tobacco, or anything.
Seal, yes, when you break that alcohol seal, guess what? It's got a state seal on it.
Exactly.
So that tells you where some of the money is going. But also, I look at it as like this, too. They know this oil, this marijuana smoke, this marijuana incense. They know these things calm people down psychologically, as well as do the medical things. But I can't understand why they're fighting things in medicine, natural medicine, that will make people calmer and also give them a health benefit, rather than the state putting their seal on alcohol, where you're going to get all these DUIs and you're going to get spousal abuse, and people get overdosed, like you said. There's so many things compared with cannabis and alcohol, that it's a no-brainer. They should be banning alcohol and making cannabis legal if they want to do anything like that, because it's not a gateway drug. Like, they got a lot of people fooled. And we got to look at who are the people who are fighting this. Now, I had Morgan Fox on from the Marijuana Policy Project based in Washington, D.C. I had him on one of my shows. And I was thinking, in my point of view, I think the pharmaceutical companies and the insurance companies are the main ones going to be the big losers, because, like we said, Henry Ford, the first car made was a hemp car, 100 times stronger than steel. I mean, you can go look at that on the internet, on YouTube. They're hitting that thing with an axe, with a sledgehammer, and it's just bouncing back, not making a scratch. Like,
exactly.
If you had cars made of that and people wore their seatbelts, and two cars with that much strength hit each other, it probably would be something like bumper cars. We would need better seatbelts, but you wouldn't get all these smashes and things like that, and you wouldn't have these insurance companies making lots of money on little bitty panels that get dented and all messed up. And you wouldn't have the fatalities. The worst you could get probably is some whiplash, but that's why I said you would try to make a better seatbelt. You wouldn't have motors coming in on people, crushing them. You wouldn't have all of that. It wouldn't be as bad.
Mm-mm.
But those are the people that's going to lose. The pharmaceutical companies, they're going to lose because you're not going to need all their medication. They just think everything can be solved by a pill, when in fact marijuana can solve and treat many of the pills. Probably could take a person off of a handful of pills. I know people on 8 pills a day. It's probably people doing more that I don't know about, but I know a person that's on at least 8 pills a day. And looking at marijuana and cannabis, I can see that some of those pills they wouldn't need. If they had cannabis, they wouldn't need some of those pills. So those are some of the people that I think is going to lose. Mr. Fox, he thinks that the people that's fighting it the most and they're going to lose is police departments, because he said they bank their money upon marijuana arrests so they can go out and buy more expensive military-grade toys for the department.
Exactly.
Now, I haven't seen and that's how he feels is exactly doing. And we talked about how that is crushing the Alabama prison industrial complex. You get somebody get caught with cannabis, they get out. Number one, they can't vote, so they're out of the political process. I mean, permanently barred from it. I mean, that's the whole greatness of being an American, to be able to participate in the political process, but they are quick to take that away from you permanently for a plant. There's been a medicinal plant for over 5,000 years, and that's going to also hurt them from getting a job. They're not going to be able to gain good employment with that felony cannabis conviction.
Exactly.
And
they can't provide for their family, and that's just going to lead them right back to prison.
Yeah, that leads them right back. You're exactly correct. And compounded with not being able to participate in the political process again, not being able to get a good job again, and then it's going to be hard for them to get housing. What do you think is going to happen? They're going to return to prison very shortly, because you've cut off everything for them to redeem themselves. And Alabama has to get away from this idea of just locking people up and forgetting about them. We do not need nonviolent felons in prison. We need jobs. We need programs to help these people. We don't need to scar them permanently for a plant that's been in use for thousands of years.
Well, they shouldn't be felons to start with. A nonviolent offender for possession, number one, it shouldn't be an offense. It should be, like I was telling you earlier, the CSA should only put it on, look up Leland Green, the cannabis conspiracy. It's where the CSA schedule will only put it on prohibition for like 6 months. And they had to prove within that 6 months time that it had to meet all the requirements for that schedule. Well, they only got one more time, a 6 month extension. And they couldn't prove it was proven wrong by the Schaefer Commission in 1971. That research was being done to verify, as CSA itself required, that scheduled cannabis should be, if at all, on Schedule 1, was temporary from Congress. The Schaefer Commission found cannabis should not be on schedule, and Nixon shredded and ignored and ramped up the war on cannabis, the longest war in the history of U.S.
Yeah.
And number two, the word currently was 1970. And number three says the answer above for number one, the Schaefer Commission found the substance to be safe enough not to be on schedule, and so did DEA Judge Francis Young in 1988, where he reviewed cannabis Schedule 1, the famous quote, in strict medical terms, marijuana is far safer than many foods commonly consumed. For example, eating 10 raw potatoes can result in toxic response. By comparison, it is physically impossible to eat enough marijuana to induce death. Marijuana in its natural form is one of the safest therapeutic active substances known to man. By any measure of rational analyst, marijuana can be safely used within supervised routine of medical care.
Mm-hmm.
And that was by a DEA administrative law judge.
Yes, and the reason why, yeah, they know that, you know, it's them got to be common knowledge, but I think a lot of states, especially here like in Alabama, a lot of states, they're dependent upon that prison industrial complex. It's big business. It's big business. Not only is it big privately owned prison business, but they also get a 2-for-1 because look at how many people. They should be locking up anyone, but there's a significant amount of marijuana and cannabis offenders in prison. There's plenty of them in prison. You get minorities, there's a lot of them in there for cannabis. You get them in there for that, you're going to feed that prison industrial complex, and plus you're going to take them out of the voting pool. And
right.
To me, having, you know, there's no way, maybe there's a way, you know, if they get broken up, maybe they'll do it. But there's no way they're going to give up their food for the prison industrial complex and give up being able to take these people out of the voting pool, especially when you have a supermajority down there in Montgomery, Alabama. It's going to be almost impossible. There's going to have to be some type of resolution to this, and it may take a revolution, a cannabis revolution. But I'm glad that your group is out there and we're stirring the pot and we're keeping it alive and keeping it going, because even all the way back in ancient times, I mean, we hold the Romans up, but if we listen to one of the most famous Romans, Pliny the Elder, because he wrote about the medicinal properties of cannabis way back then, around 79 A.D., he wrote that the roots of the cannabis plant boiled in water ease cramped joints, gout, too, and similar violent pain. It can operate as a painkiller, curing gout, and easing cramped joints.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's why I think that you're going to get a real hard fight from Big Pharma. Marijuana has the potential to basically put them out of business, the people that's running around pimping out chemotherapy, they're going to be hurting. So you got big money behind it that's trying to stop it.
Well, not
just
only
like
that, like you said, the prisons are, you know, most of prisons around here are private prisons, and the money that the state pays them. And like you said, the big toys for the militia, police, that's what I call them, because they shouldn't need all these militia type toys, you know, that they're to get.
Cars.
Yeah.
Or armored Humvees.
Right, they shouldn't need all of that, and they have no real reason to have all of those. They're out to protect and serve, not do home raids and bust in homes with all this stuff. Just like they threw that grenade in that baby's crib and messed that baby up, and stuff like that. I mean, that's carrying it a little too far. I mean, they're getting too big-headed with all this stuff. I mean, they're not even protecting serving anymore. They're our enemies anymore. They're not protecting us.
And that goes in lockstep with what Morgan Fox was talking about, is they're very dependent on it too, because if they can do more raids, more seizures, and show and put on paper how there's an epidemic of this dangerous drug, like we said, that should be rescheduled, they could then apply to the federal government, and we got to reschedule such and such drug here in this community. We need more fancy toys.
Well, you know, the way I see it is you know, they're cracking down on the opiates now that's being done here, because Alabama was one of the highest states that was prescribing opiates.
Yeah,
your Lortab, your Oxycontin, your Oxycodone. I know, because my doctor had me on 5 different ones at one time, and I quit them all. But then all these patients that are being cut off all of a sudden because they're cracking down on them, they're going to heroin now. So there's a big buildup of heroin use in Montgomery. There's a big heroin use from what I'm hearing in Mobile. There's a big heroin use in Birmingham. And from what I've been told from people, there is moving up to Huntsville. So that's people they should be going after.
Yeah, and another thing also that we're having a problem with here in North Alabama, I don't know if it's hit y'all already yet or it's headed that way, and that is with the synthetic drugs. And me and Mr. Morgan Fox, the Marijuana Policy Project, we also talked about that. Now, legalizing cannabis would make those synthetic overdoses and death and sales all through the floor. Because one of the main reasons people are doing it is to get around it. They want something that gives them what marijuana gives. And that's why I want cannabis.
They want that euphoric high. And they're going through that spice and stuff and bath salts or whatever they want to call them to get that.
Whatever else they sprayed on it.
Mm-hmm. Mhm. Yep. And that would, I mean, if not only would that decrease in crime, it would decrease in overdose from all the pharmaceuticals and everything. It would decrease in all the we would have a lower wreck fatality, because people would go, that was on alcohol, would go to it, would have less fatalities on the highway.
Yes.
You know, everything would decrease instead of increasing like it is today. So, you know, the crime rate would be down, plus the state would have revenues, so they wouldn't have to push all, like the governor's trying to do now, push all these higher taxes. That would be revenue for them.
Yeah, look at Colorado. They're getting, in addition to all the other taxes that they're getting from the marijuana industry, they're also on track to get $23 million this year for the schools. Now, how hard would it be for Alabama, as broke as it is, to get at least $20 million a year into public schools? I just don't see it coming. They don't want a tax, and I don't see where they could get it. This is the way where they could get it, because we probably would excel better being in this climate that we're in, growing hemp probably better than those people out west.
Exactly, because our soil is a lot better. We have the proper soil for it.
Yes, I like the way Tennessee, they just passed, they're going to use the hemp, and, you know, they're not going to use the plant, but I think they're going to make plastics and other things out of it. But they approved something in their legislature where they'll be able to use industrial hemp, and that's what they're going to do. And I bet they're going to do very well on that. But it's just crazy to me that Alabama just wants no part of it. I mean, they got Carley's Law, but, like, again, like Mr. Fox was saying, they make it almost impossible and risky for a doctor to prescribe it.
Well,
if the feds say you can do it, but your state says you can't, if you go in and prescribe it to somebody, the state can say, well, hey, you broke the law and turn your license in. So it's sort of like,
right, well, you can't really prescribe it. You have to recommend it.
Mm-hmm.
And as you, speaking of Carley's Law, that was the most poorly written law there ever was. Because here in Alabama, when they wrote the law, they didn't write the law for any way to bring the extract in, and they didn't write the law where there could be any way to grow it here. So the only way that they're going to get anything is going to be synthetic, is going to be drug manufactured, it's not going to be the real thing, and it's not going to work.
It's very unworkable, and you know, I guess they wanted to try to quieten some people down by passing this over. They try to pacify some people with some little fake measures, but we need full legalization to the level that Alaska has, and I think it might be 12, I don't know, but I think it's 20 plants that you can have at your place of residence. That's enough herbs to address, you know, a whole family's need. You know, I mean, you could eat it, smoke it, or, you know, just chew on the stems.
Right. What a lot of people, the uneducated out there, don't know, as long as you do not put heat to it, you do not get high off of it. As long as you just eat it like in a salad or juice it use it like a salad or whatever, you won't get high off of it, but you will still be putting those receptors in place. Because your body is an endocannabinoid system. And those cannabinoids that when you're eating them, you are still putting those receptors in place and to have those cannabinoids in your system. And nothing better to keep you healthy for an endocannabinoid system is to give it what it needs, which are the cannabinoids.
Yes, and so they can be out there going throughout your body doing what they do best, which is attacking cancer cells.
Exactly. Exactly.
And I had a friend, I still got a friend, he's out in California, and what you were just talking about a second ago, he loves the juicing. Like you said, he doesn't put heat to it. He mixes the marijuana in with, he said, a V8, a spicy V8, and also fresh spinach. And, and he said he feels so much better. He said it only took him about a week, and he said he could actually feel the difference just in himself. In himself. He had a little bit more spring to his step, and he said he had pressure, like, from breathing and stuff like that. And that's when I told him, but once he started that juicing, all that went away. And I told him, because he has a little deal with asthma, but most of that is gone. And found out, you know, marijuana is good for people who have asthma, because it opens up the lungs. It reacts in a way that it forces the lungs to open up. So somebody with asthma,
it definitely works on COPD patients.
Bad, but it works on you. Yes, yes. And I was looking at some studies also myself about they had some money. The government started a study, and they were researching cannabis for treating ADHD, and I'm going to have to find where I got that and post that. But the research was going very well, and out of nowhere, the funding was cut. And so that tells you also, the people who are prescribing all our kids ADHD medication, they deserve to be closely watched as well, and we need to go around these other places and see what they have said, other countries who have done the full research. So, you know, we stopped in the middle of it. It was looking promising, and the money just dried up. So I guess they didn't want a cure for it. But as we talk about the religious, let's go back to the Holy Land. People need to realize, and we say we're Israel's friend to the end and all this other stuff, how about they are leading the research in the world in cannabis?
Right.
I mean, if we can follow them for war, why can't we follow them, what they're doing on the medical, and then they're leading the world in it?
They're the leaders for epilepsy study.
Yes.
And because I've been following them because I have epilepsy or I have seizure disorder. And I've been studying those real closely. And they're actually using cannabis in their hospitals now for pain treatments. They're using the vape system for pain.
Mm-hmm.
In their hospitals in Israel. And that
like I said,
is
they're leading on the cutting edge of it. I know back in the 70s it was Harvard Medical School and they're very reputable. I mean you can't beat them. One of the top medical schools in the country. But they found plenty of uses for cannabis. And they were very loud about it. They said it makes a better birth control pill than they have now. And how it quells the spasms of epilepsy better than the stuff we over there in Afghanistan fighting about, you know. So we wouldn't need all that stuff. We wouldn't care about Afghans, poppy seeds, and all that kind of stuff if we use marijuana, because they eradicated some of it from the terrorists, but they're also making deals to buy it from the Afghan government to make these painkillers. So I say, why are we spending money buying something when we can have cannabis legal and save that money and put that money into research on more cannabis instead of just buying some type of derivative that's not as good as cannabis? We're always making decisions as a country for some of the wrong reasons.
So right.
To destroy the poppy crops over there, of the terrorists, we have to agree to buy the ones that the government have. And that makes no sense at all. That's appeasing that government because they get to make some money on the back end from the same thing the Taliban was doing. But what we should be doing is making our own medicines from the cannabis and let them have that.
Right. Just the government is getting too much into our personal lives, and they're not taking care of what they need to take care of on the national level or the state level. They're too busy making all, and that's wasteful money, making all these little agencies to tend to our personal lives. They need to do away with these little agencies that tend to our personal lives, get back in hand on taking care of the state business, and stay out of our lives.
Exactly.
You know, we have like I said before many times, my mama, my daddy gave birth to me. They taught me to have a mind of my own. I don't need the government telling me what to do. You know, I'm my own person. I'm a grown lady. I'm 60 years old now. I don't need them telling me what I can put in my body and what not to. That's none of their business.
Especially a plant that you can grow yourself, that's an herb that you can use to treat all your personal health with or to do your religious instructions with. How dare they come in and say you can't use it?
Now, exactly.
What they need to realize is that the Jamestown settlers brought marijuana into North America. Settlers brought it with them in 1611. And throughout the colonial period, hemp fiber was an important export. They exported and made lots of money off of it in the 1600s. And even in, I think it was 1762, Virginia had awarded bounties for hemp culture and manufacture. And they also imposed penalties on people who did not produce it. So you, in the 1600s.
Well, if
you
were
a
farmer in Yorktown and Williamsburg, if you were a farmer and you did not grow one-third of your crop in hemp, you were jailed.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's how you pay your taxes on your farms.
Yeah.
There is a big brass plaque sitting in the middle of a field in old Williamsburg where they do the reenactments, there's a huge brass plaque that states that exact same thing.
Hmm. I knew from the history of George Washington, he grew hemp. He grew a lot of hemp. He grew hemp for 30 years. But some of the newer, it's probably older too. I know in the early 1700s or it was the late 1600s, they talked about using cannabis to treat depression and anxiety.
Mm-hmm.
And I can say from I've known growing up, I've known people who, even before I knew about any of the research, that it did exactly that. I knew some people that were depressed and people who suffered some types of social anxiety. They, if they get around a large crowd or something, they just, you know, they sort of like freeze up and tense up.
It works wonders for schizophrenia.
Yeah, and this, and we're talking about depression, schizophrenia, and all that. Look at a time where we're doing now. They're cutting money from the mental health field and mental health departments all across the state in Alabama. I mean, they closed one here close to me in Decatur, North Alabama regional hospital. They just closed it. So this is another reason why, yeah, they can close it, but give these people some cannabis on their way out.
Mm-hmm. Well, look at the post-traumatic syndrome and our vets.
Yes.
Our vets sign their life away on that dotted line when they sign up. They go over, they fight these wars. Well, anybody with any half mind knows that anybody goes over and fights these wars does not come back the same.
True.
And they need this cannabis to help them with their anxieties, with their post-war syndrome, you know, because a lot of them saw a lot of horrific things while over there.
Yes,
and that's hard to live with.
Horrific things. Yes, and it's hard to live with when you had to do, not just see them, that you had to actually carry out some very disturbing things. You know, for even though it was for your own survival that you had to do it, that still in the end, once you get past that initial danger, you're still going to feel that even though you may have had to kill someone to save your own life, it's still going to bother you.
Exactly. Exactly. So, you know, our vets need this. And the way they come back and they fought for our country and the way they come back and the way our government is treating them, half of the people come back, they're homeless. They have nowhere, you know, they're being foreclosed on. You know, they're having to live in tent cities, and that's not a way to treat the people that fought for you, that fought for your freedoms. I mean, our government should do a lot more for our vets than they're doing. And cannabis is one of them.
And it seems like they would, as fast as they are to go to war. You know, as fast as they are to go to war, they should be just as fast. Here's a natural plant, and this would save the government some money, because look at all the vets that they got on all these medications by Big Pharma to treat their problems, when you can just say, okay, they need to legalize it all the way across the board. But
mm-hmm.
as soon as possible, immediately they need to say, if you are a vet, you are allowed to have X amount of plants at your house, not for resale, for personal use, and not outside of your property. That's something they should just do automatically real fast, you know, to show that they support the vets.
Exactly.
A lot of these vets, you know, like I said, they can grow their own, they can eat it, and even let them smoke it. Like I said, they pay in the ultimate price, and they're protecting the country. They're keeping us safe. So why limit them coping with them keeping us safe?
Exactly.
Well, I'm going to take this break, and we'll be right back.
All right.
With Save Me a Talk.
Bringing voices to power. They can't stop us. Check us out on HuntsvilleBlack.com. That's HuntsvilleBlack.com.
Protect yourself.
Right. But I think If you ask me, the anthrax threat scare was just another governmental thing.
Yeah, they have a lot of those out there. And
yeah,
you got to worry about things like that. And also, I think one of the main people we should keep an eye on too is there. A lot of people don't know. There's a lot of people who are adamant that the world is overpopulated. So these are the people that don't want to see you grow a marijuana plant and live longer, because you're going
to
get their agenda. The powerful
people.
Have
you
feel
seen
like
all these FEMA camps?
Resources.
Have you seen all these FEMA camps with all the plastic coffins and razor fences and all this stuff around them? And
they're getting ready for something. They're definitely, you know, they could, you know, if we were naive, we would think, oh, they're just, you know, preparing and just in case. No, they don't never prepare just in case. They know, you know, that something's coming down the pipe is what I'm saying. They're getting it ready for something. And what that something is, we don't know. I mean, is there a meteor coming that they're not telling us about and them sending the world into a panic? You know, but they're getting us ready for something. And it's just hard to believe they're just doing it for our own good. You know, we haven't seen that yet.
Right.
So who knows what those FEMA camps are really going to be setting up. And I would be interested to know, is there any other country in the world that's also preparing these type of camps?
I haven't heard of any.
Yeah.
I haven't heard of any with I think we've got six now, and I think Indiana's doing another one now. Well, but converting an old train station into another one. They're putting up 10-foot fences around it with razor wire on top, and they're saying that's supposed to be a home for the homeless. I don't think why would the homeless need a place to stay with 10-foot razor wire?
So they don't break out and be homeless again. And,
right.
And it sort of reminds me of the famous, the real Count Dracula. You know, when he invited all the infirmed and sick to his castle for a feast for anybody who was, you know, hurting like that, the crippled, the lame, he invited them all in. And he killed about 7,000 folks. He got rid of his problem. He didn't want to take care of them. He invited
right.
them all in, and he killed everyone and slaughtered them. So the people that was infirmed and sick, he got rid of them in one swoop. That's the type of thing you have to worry about with the government. Now they just couldn't haul them in there now and just do something like that. They got better crafty ways of doing it nowadays.
Exactly. And, you know, just like the government are saying, you know, about Social Security, you know, should they government change Social Security? Well, they can't change Social Security because that is not a benefit. That is an entitlement that you pay into each time you make a paycheck. They take money out your paycheck. And that is something they cannot touch. And if they do, they'll have lawsuits out the yang-yang because that
yeah.
is something you're entitled to because you pay into it every time you get a paycheck. It's not a benefit that the government gives you, like, you know, food stamps or something like that. This is something you paid into every time you draw a paycheck.
Mm.
But yet the Congress is trying to go in there and do their best about changing it out.
What do you think about, I don't know, this is an act I was reading about called the Harrison Act. And President Wilson signed the Harrison Act, which became the model of the drug regulation legislation that set it up to have cannabis banned.
I'm not familiar with.
Basically, what happened was Francis Harrison in New York. I can't remember whether he was a Democrat or a Republican, but he introduced a few bills around 1913 or 14 to remedy the drug problem by controlling the domestic production of it, the manufacture of opium, and started regulating the international opium trade. I mean, they really stepped out there. They made the act here, but then set about to regulate opium across the world. And according to his bill, opium could be imported or exported only for medicinal purposes. He also suggested that the government put a special tax upon all persons who sell, distribute, or give away opium or coca leaves. So that gets us to back to, that's for opium, but that gets us back to when the marijuana was okay, as long as you paid your marijuana tax and you went and got your stamp for marijuana and you grew a certain amount in your crops.
Right.
They went from the profit from it until they just switched the profit from getting the direct tax into making money off of the prison industrial complex. That's just what I think, because during World War II, they were calling on all Americans to grow hemp. And there's a video on YouTube that a person can watch. It's called Hemp for Victory. I think it's like a infomercial from the United States military during World War II. They needed that hemp for rope and plastics. They needed it to win the war. It was hemp for victory. Now, if hemp can help us win the war, and we know it's got all these other health benefits, the reasons to outlaw it becomes more ridiculous.
The whole war on drugs is ridiculous, period.
A waste of money.
Abundantly waste of money. What is it, Switzerland that did away with the war on drugs? Wasn't it Switzerland?
Yes, I believe. Switzerland and their crime rate plummeted.
Exactly.
Go back to what you were saying about giving it to veterans. Look at the states who implement that, like, say, Colorado. They had a 10% decrease in violent crime just in the first 30 days. They also had like a 6% drop in suicides as well.
Exactly, because they're not on these antidepressants and all these drugs that make you suicidal.
Yes. And cannabis is known to treat depression.
Exactly.
So it doesn't make a lot of sense.
You don't smoke it, but if you ever did, I guarantee you.
I did smoke it. Coming up, I've smoked it in high school.
Well, you get happy. You get happy, you get motivated, and you get happy. There's no drama.
I've never seen anybody smoke it and come out and become violent. They might eat you out of a house at home and sound stupid laughing, like you said, that laughing and stuff is not funny. But on the flip side of that, look at the people who drink alcohol. Man, I've seen people drink alcohol and smash things, you know, have wrecks. I mean, the alcohol does far more damage than cannabis. I've never seen anybody smoke marijuana and go out and start a fight, but growing up, I've seen so many people have a fight after drinking alcohol.
Mm-hmm. And spousal abuse. Wrecks.
Yeah.
That's where a lot of your gun violence comes from. That and your prescription drugs.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, I wish Alabama could just wake up. I wish all the nation that is not legal right now could wake up and see the truth behind it. Because,
mm-hmm.
you know, that's what they need to do. They need to quit the ostrich syndrome with their head in the sand, get their head out of the sand, open their eyes, and listen to the people. Because
yeah.
the people evidently know more than they do.
They definitely do. Yeah, so is there anything else you would like to... Like, how can people, I mean, give us your Facebook page and other ways how they can become a part of this to bring more awareness and support and keep up with what y'all are doing in case they need, you know, say, hey, we need to meet here or we need to blast this representative's email address. Give away with some information where some of our listeners can become a part of your group and how they can help.
Well, the Facebook page is www.facebook.com/groups. 3975491803457/59/. And that's how they can get to my page. And then they can ask to join. We have a lot of good information on the group. We try to inform our members about all the different diseases, and if they have a question, they ask the question on there, and I'll go research it, and I'll try to answer. We are over 5,200 members strong. We do our best to educate everybody, and if I don't have the answer, somebody will come up with an answer.
I'm proud to say that I joined the group, and it's been some great discussion on there, and I look forward to keeping it close in contact, and because I like the way, you know, like you said, the group is having great discussion.
Yeah, I try my best to keep it clean, just to keep it on the medicinal cannabis topic, and because that is what we're here for. We're here to educate. And we're here to learn as well as educate, because I'm forever learning. I'm forever researching. I'm forever trying to get these people to go out and educate others. And it's just an ongoing thing. We have to educate. Education is the key to success.
Yes, it is.
And we have to educate.
Are there any other groups that you work with, like in lockstep, or y'all collaborate on certain things? And
yes.
I know another thing that I wanted to get across is tell us some of the, I know Patricia Todd and also Laura Hall. Laura Hall brought this issue up years ago. And I think she had something in her plan about relieving the prison system and at the same time doing some retroactive things that could help some of the people that's locked up for it now. But also let listeners know if there's any politicians out there that support it, who they can get behind and show their support behind them. That way, when they go on the floor, they know they got a group of people, and the people in the audience, the other members, know that they got support. So if there are any politicians out there that's really need to support, but we'd like to have those names too. So we
Bobby Singleton.
Okay.
Bobby Singleton was the sponsor of the last bill that we had last that another group had last year. So he's good to go. And as far as groups, One Plant is another good group to go to. James Messner is the head of that group. He shares a lot of great information on that group as well.
Okay, so do y'all have anything, are there any rallies or marches or protests coming up?
Hopefully having one October 16th.
And that will be in Montgomery?
at the state capitol.
Okay.
At 10 o'clock in the morning.
Okay, that'll be great.
But we haven't got all the details worked out on who all the speakers is, but we do have Cedric Coley, the one that ran for District 4 seat in Montgomery.
Okay.
He will be a speaker. We have a retired doctor that's going to be speaking. We have hopefully have a chemist for NASA that's going to be speaking on pediatric epilepsy. I'm still in the process of getting speakers up. I'm still in the process of getting things together and getting people that's going to be giving testimonies and everything.
Yeah.
So we're still putting it together.
I would love to see a site.
Sir?
I would love to see a site. I would love to see a site or either a page where people can come on and give the testimony. And talk to
each
other.
Can give it on my page at any time.
Oh, okay. Okay. Well, definitely, I'll definitely throw that in there the next time. I'm going to recommend that page to a lot of people because I know some people that's interested in the issue. Some of them smoke cannabis, of course, and some of them don't, but they both support people should have access. That's the main thing about this. People should be able to have access to this plant. They've had access to it for over 5,000 years. It's just time to get over it. And law enforcement and these crybaby politicians need to just get over it.
The way I see it.
Whining.
The way I see it is the politicians should be held accountable for every death that occurs that cannabis should have saved, that cannabis could and would have saved. Because we, the sick, dying, and suffering, need this medicine and should have it. And they work for us. They are our, you know, we are their bosses because they work for our taxpayer, you know, they work and earn taxpayer money.
But
so they
now
actually,
it's got, yes, they're, we're the employer. But
exactly.
The strange thing about that is now that we have employed them, they're feeding off of us.
Wow.
Right. And they've totally ignored us. Once they got the cushy seats. But that's over with. That's done with. We're tired of them ignoring us now that they got those cushy seats. And it's, you know, we're fighting back now.
Yeah,
we're
They got the cushy seats, but what they need to understand is why we sent them there in the first place. And if they think that they are comfortable now, they can just.
Mm-hmm.
They can just realize that we're going to be organized and we can make them pay the price at the polls. Okay, if we supported you and you were sympathetic toward our issues, then you got there and got comfortable. Well, then this group and that group, we're looking for a candidate just going to get us back to this issue. And I would challenge them in the primary. And they need to wake up.
Exactly.
They may sell the same story and then get in there and do the same thing, but they need, that's just the process of holding their feet to the fire. I mean, if they don't want to stand up to what they said they was going to do or push the issue to the side, then we need to be doing some candidate research or putting it out there before time, and maybe they'll make a move on it. Because the politicians, they're very smart. I've did opposition research, and I've worked in politics and worked in campaign. It's a very gritty business, and if you're not making an impact and if you're not organized and they can't see that you can do anything, they're going to ignore you. But once they see you get organized, then even if they don't fully agree with you, they're going to have to come to the table. So if we get somebody out there, we let them know that we're searching for a candidate. Sir, we supported you the last time, but we're searching for a candidate who's a little bit more progressive on the cannabis issue. And
we've put out there now big time that if you do not support cannabis and legalization thereof cannabis, well, you won't get our vote. I mean, that's just plain and simple. And there is, as far as recreational, there is no such thing as recreational, because even though you're enjoying it without being sick now, you're still putting those receptors, CB1 and CB2, in place for when aging. You're still putting those receptors in place that you is either going to stop or slow the process of Alzheimer's, dementia, Parkinson's. You know, you're putting those receptors in place then to possibly not have those other aging diseases.
Yes, and also, like I was saying earlier, you're also going to have those, you're going to enable your body and those receptors to go on the attack for things like cancer. They're going to go on an attack, and we already know that the oil itself can send cancer straight into remission in a short period of time. So, like you said, I think an aggressive bill and an aggressive legalization across the board, something that should be modeled after Alaska's bill, where you can help, like
or
I said,
Oregon's
hold up to 20 plants. Yes, 20 plants at your house and up to an ounce on your person.
Alaska's or Oregon's, either one, they're both great bills.
Yes, and the Marijuana Policy Project, they helped craft both of those pieces of legislation. But we got a long way to go here in Alabama, and it's good to see groups like yours, and I hope there's more talk shows like this one. I'm going to always fight for people's right to choose to use this plant, and I want to know, like I said, you know some people, but I would just like to see the religious community stand up also, and I think it would be good. I mean, if you're going to take the Lord's Supper on whatever day you take it, first Sunday, second Sunday, every Sunday, however, you also need to do yourself like the ancient prophets and people taught you to do, to put this oil on you. And we already know that the cannabis does, the oil does good for you, so it would probably do good to bathe in some cannabis oil to get off
of
your pores. It'd probably do you very good.
Right. And hemp seed oil is great for your system, great for your hair. It's, I mean, anything to do with cannabis, the cannabinoids, is great for your system.
Yeah, it makes me think about when I was small, I would see all these little jars of, it was called, it might have been Indian hemp grease. You know, it has little bits of hemp cut up into it, and people use that a lot for their hair.
Mm-hmm.
So there's just so many uses that it can be used for. It should not be illegal. People should be able to use it in their personal lives. They should be able to use it as a medicine, like one of the superfoods, like you mentioned, like tomatoes and things like cucumbers, that has all these healing medicinal properties in it. And they also should be able to use it in their religious expression.
Exactly. We just need to use it as we choose to. I mean, not everybody may choose to use it, but they should not hold it against the ones that do.
Yeah, and that's another problem that I have with a lot of people also, too, on this issue. It's a lot of people who would not use it because some of the rhetoric and some of the campaigns against marijuana are so old and have been out there for so long that some people, they're not just going to try it anyway because they've been convinced already that it's a bad thing. But if you, that's your choice. But if other people want to use it, you should not stay in the way of that. The best thing you can do is to educate yourself about cannabis to see why these people are demanding access to it. If you're not willing to, just because you've heard about it and you don't want to have nothing to do with it, but you're against it, if you're not willing to actually do the research and look upon it before yourself, especially if you run around here calling yourself a conservative Christian, just about everybody in this state, especially if you're doing that, then you need to look at all the biblical references to that and all the medical references that go way back. You still might not want to do it, but if somebody wants to use it for religious purposes or for the medicinal purposes, you should get behind that and support it, just like I'm saying.
Exactly. Exactly. That's what I'm saying.
If you don't have anything else to add, I would love to invite you back on the show again. Anytime any big breaking news or big event you got going on, just contact me on Facebook, and you have my number. You can call me, and we'll get back on this show to keep the information alive and keep everything moving forward.
Would love to.
With that being said, we'll be in touch, and we're going to keep on spreading the information.
Good deal.
Once again, listeners, we've been talking with President of the Medical Cannabis Advocates of Alabama, Faye Medlock.
You have a good day.
You have a good day also, and I'll be talking to you soon.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
They can't stop us. Check us out on HuntsvilleBlack.com. That's HuntsvilleBlack.com. Another place where we're bringing forces to power. that bring your voices to power in every medium. Also, every class of those, we're looking for writers, editors,